All right, so we're back again, everybody, and we are live now. I hope somebody can give us an okay in the chat there. It's a special occasion. We finally hit our 30 streams, 30 classic movies we've done so far. And I thought I would pick up one which was a bit of a knockabout. Everybody, the 80s action movies, I've done them a lot on here. Thanks there in the chat. And I thought, those people replying to me on Twitter saying, oh, it's all just doom and gloom with your content and everything. And I was thinking, it's really not. And I did that last video with a photographer. And that was like, I was really trying, let's do something optimistic and everything. Let's do something a bit different. And it got like 12 or 13,000 views. But the video that I did on the competency crisis, which was kind of apocalyptic, that one gets 96,000 views. And I think people want you to do things which are a bit upbeat. But then when you do that, nobody pays any attention. They want the doom and the gloom. But
I found the same thing. It's the same thing with me. You
and
make
I
it.
think go
Well, I was
on.
gonna say you make a video about something pleasant for a change and nobody watches it. You make one about how the world's on fire and then everyone's tuning
Everybody
in.
loves it. Everybody loves the black pill. And I think this will tie in later with First Blood. So anyway, to get back to the main topic, I decided that because one of the running themes is that when we do classic movies, is that I've often said that I've watched First Blood more than any other movie. Like my revealed preference would be if somebody was to say what's the best movie of all time, I may say Lawrence of Arabia, which was our first ever classic movies. But in actual, like the films that I've watched the most, it would probably be First Blood and even Rambo 2. The only one that could compete would probably be The Empire Strikes Back. But look, everybody talks about Star Wars all the time, and I just don't want to touch it on the channel anymore. So I thought, yeah, let's actually do that. Let's have just a jump into the Rambo because they're stupid, they're fun, they're high octane. And when it comes to First Blood, it's actually quite a lovely movie. I think First Blood's like genuinely a great film, you know. What's your impressions of the Rambo saga? Was it the first time that you saw them?
Yes, it actually was. I had seen the 2008 movie once. I didn't particularly like it, but this was the first time I had seen any of the original trilogy from the 80s. Of course, I knew who Rambo was, but I had never actually sat down and watched the three movies before. So I would say I have kind of this like Heideggerian Spenglerian post-structural view. I'm just joking. This is not a theory cell stream. This is it's Rambo. It's action, it's blood and it's shooting and machine guns, and it was good fun.
Yeah, I mean, all right. So they are what they are. But look, when those opening bars of First Blood come in, and you've got that kind of melancholic horn, and even the scene it's actually filmed in Washington, I think. And it's just beautifully done. The mountains, I mean, it looks like a place you want to live. There's something about that misty, and everything looks wet. Everything looks cold and foggy, and it's just the kind of place that I love. I've never been to that part of the world, but I would love to. But I it did it, I mean, just to get into First Blood a little bit, I'm sure everybody knows the storyline, which is why I kind of it's an easy one because look, let's be honest, everybody knows a storyline, and you can explain it in a couple of minutes. But I do love the vibe of the town that they're in, you know. And I do love the way Will Teasel, the sheriff, comes out and everybody knows everybody, and he's got this kind of paternalistic attitude, everyone. And I just think the town in First Blood, it just looks great. It just looks a great place to live. And you can see like what America was. And look, let's not get too doom laden. It probably you can look at that town now, it looks kind of the same. Bit more global homo brands though.
Yeah, so someone in the chat was saying that it was filmed in BC, in British Columbia, Canada. I actually have been to that part of the world a couple of times. I've been to British Columbia twice, and I've also been to Washington State as well, where the movie takes place. They're right beside each other, so it could be either one, really. It is an absolutely beautiful place, the world. Someone in the chat was saying that it looks like Valhalla on Earth. It really does. You know, there's these these forests that just stretch for miles and miles up and down the Rocky Mountains. It was actually the first time I had ever gone abroad in my life was going to Washington State on the west coast of the United States. It is an amazing part of the world, and I really do just like the scenery of the movie. It does look like, you know, the perfect place for your future white ethno state, I guess. It just really looks like it really is an amazing part of the world, both British Columbia and
History Brewer pointed out as well the great Brian Dennehy plays the cop. So I mean, the gist of it is that you enter the scene in this beautiful little town, and Sylvester Stallone's walking through it, and he's got an army jacket on. He does look a bit scruffy. He looks kind of out of place. And then he gets pulled over by the Brian Dennehy, who's like this big bear of a cop. And he basically just wants him to move on. And I think I think when you kind of whittle down to it, there's been something funny. I think there's some like a misunderstanding, because I think Brian Dennehy, and then later the cops, they bring him into the station because Stallone Rambo then goes back into town and he's being dumped on the outskirts. And I think this, when you understand something that's gone wrong, it explains a lot about the film, because I think Brian Dennehy, the Teasel, and the cops, they think Rambo is just a hippie. They don't get that he's actually a soldier. They think, because he says, you know, walking around wearing that jacket, looking the way you do, and it's as if it's a kind of nihilistic hippie. They don't understand, because I think normally they would have sympathy for the soldiers. And this is something which is at the heart of First Blood, which does have a kind of tragedy to it. It does have a serious element to it, which people, I think a lot of people think the Rambo movies are, it's a big joke. But yeah, the later ones, definitely the third one is. But there is something serious sort of simmering away under it all. And I do, my take is that they actually thought he was just a hippie. So in that, they didn't want him in the town because he was just this trouble-causing hippie. They don't like these people, you know. But then when they actually found out he's a soldier, they realized that, well, it's too late now. It is what it is. You know, that's my general take on the way the film goes.
Yeah, you get the sense at the very beginning of the film that he's extremely jaded with the United States, especially kind of the really raw deal that he would have gotten coming back from Vietnam, because I mean, the Vietnam War was it really did wonders for the New Left, because it was, you know, it gave them the narrative that they wanted of America being this racist, imperialistic, capitalistic country that goes off and imposes its will on people, on these poor people over in Southeast Asia. And, you know, you kind of get the sense, I got the sense immediately from the character of John Rambo that I can just imagine him, like, you know, stepping back off the plane, arriving back in the United States from Vietnam, and, you know, having someone who actually was like some long haired hippie, like, yell at him and give him the middle finger, and, you know, some kid with like John Lennon glasses or whatever, and a bowl cut, calling him a murderer or something like that. And yeah, I mean, if you actually had been somebody who had gone through, who had gone and fought in the scorching hot jungles of Vietnam, only to come back to that, I mean, it would have been, I mean, I can only imagine that it would have felt pretty lousy, and it would have, and you kind of see that in the character of John Rambo, he is really jaded. Now, I don't really get the sense that the people in the town or the cops in the town would have been that way. But yeah, I did get the sense that they kind of saw him as an outsider. They didn't really think of him as some rough and tumble Green Beret Vietnam vet who had gone off and kicked the asses of commies. They kind of just saw him as this, like, you know, long haired drifter who's probably going to peddle dope in the town or something like that.
Yeah, I think the other element of it, which actually, I mean, the jailbreak is brilliant, isn't it? When the music soars and it's the first time you see him like go at it, because you're seeing him, like they take the piss out of him, they're showering him naked, they're beating him, and then when they try to, they say we're gonna shave you with a cutthroat razor and we're gonna do it dry, and there's one of the cops, like the fat one, he's a particular bastard. And he like that's the first time we see him kick off, and he just leathers them all. And then he goes through the police station, kicking the shit out of everybody, and breaks out of the police station. And it does this thing where he jumps through the off the sort of the stairs, and the music hits this kind of hero's upbeat tempo kind of thing, the main Rambo motif, which will stick with it for the rest of the whole series, kicks in for the first time properly. And it's really blood pumping. And he heads on the motocross cycle up into the wilderness, and Teasel follows him. And the whole sequence is just superb. I mean, absolutely brilliantly done, like. And this is where the more familiar part kicks in, which is that Rambo, turns out it keeps getting worse and worse for the cops, because it's like, yeah, they find out he's a soldier, but then they also find out he's like got the Medal of Honor and he's a Green Beret and he's like the elite of the elite. And then all hell breaks loose. Basically, they're going to be outclassed.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that they realize that they're outclassed, but then this is where the second part of the narrative kicks in, which is basically, we have to do this, in particular Teasel.
I think that my favorite scene in the movie is probably the initial chase scene through the forest. You know, when they're chasing after him with the helicopter and he's climbing on that cliff. I do find that is a pretty intense chase scene. And, well, yeah, I mean, there does seem to be this sinking feeling that, like, with the cops, that they really don't know who they're dealing with. And then the character of John Rambo, he's always also a guy with a major chip on his shoulder, because a bit of his backstory was that it shows flashbacks of him being tortured in Vietnam. And the idea is that he doesn't fit in with the America that he's coming back to. The opening scene of the movie, if I'm not mistaken, is him trying to find one of his one of the guys who was part of his platoon over in Vietnam, and he goes to find the guy's family, and they say that, well, he died of cancer a year or two ago, and then at that point he realizes that he's the only one left in that platoon other than the colonel who enters the story a bit later. But he is really this kind of jaded guy, because he can't fit into the America that he's come back to, because he seems like he's a guy who's absolutely good. He's a killing and fighting machine, but he's inept in normal civilian life. It says that he couldn't hold down a job and he was getting in trouble, and he just couldn't make it in the civilized world because he's been crafted for the warfare.
Yeah, what is the sort of the Big Mama wife? She says that it was all of that orange stuff they were spraying around in Nam. So the Agent Orange, and so that gave him cancer. So that's another kind of thing that the soldiers had to deal with. Later on, right at the end, he says it killed him. He got killed in Nam, and he never even knew it. So yeah, he is like the last. He is the last of his friends, and is the last of his battalion of elite soldiers who are specialized in guerrilla warfare. Like, they're really supposed to be ruthless and survive off the land and all of the rest of it. And what happens is you get a kind of a series of these hunting scenes. And there's one of the famous one, where the cops have all got these bright white hats on and they're moving through, and it just looks so ridiculous, because it's as if they're all like, it's as if the people who made the movie wanted that. They wanted the cops to stand out, to show that they are out of place and they're inept, because Rambo like totally blends in with the undergrowth. You can't see him. It'll just be rustling in the branches. Whereas the actual sort of normie cops have got bright white hats on, which makes them look like sitting ducks, which is exactly what they are.
And you also imagine that in small town America, a police force like that, like how many were there? Five or six of them? Like what would they really be dealing with? They'd probably be dealing with some petty theft or something like that. And that'd be about it. It's not exactly Detroit. And they're just way out of their depth going up against Green Beret.
You get the scene as well where he throws himself off the cliff and into the tree, so to use to cushion his landing. He's like bouncing all through the branches and everything, and he splits his arm open. And so then that's like another Rambo thing, is that like he will survive like pretty much everything, but he will feel pain. And then the legendary, like literally the Rambo knife, it became this iconic thing. When I was growing up, everybody wanted to have a Rambo knife. And he takes the needle and the thread out, so he starts to stitch himself up. And you get these kind of Rambo things, which will like repeat across the rest of the films. I mean, you know, by the time you get into some of the later ones, we'll get on to that. But yeah, I don't think any of the others catch the magic of the First Blood, even though I love the second one for various reasons. But okay, whatever. So then Troutman arrives on the scene, and he comes out with all these lines like, I'm here to save you from him. And you get all they drew First Blood. And when he pins Teasel down as well, and he says, when he gets him against the tree, all of his men, by the way, have just been injured. But in the book, the David Morrell book, it's in Virginia, and Rambo actually kills everybody. Like Troutman says, strictly speaking, he slipped up. He shouldn't have left your men alive. And you can see that actually Rambo was going easy on the men. They ended up having spikes put in their legs, or they got like shot in the shoulder, or this kind of thing. But the idea was that because he was at home and because they were Americans, he was taking it easy on them. So they all just got roughed up a little bit. There was only one of them died, and that was like literally he was shooting at Rambo. And then you get don't push it, or I'll give you a war. You won't believe. Just clap. Yeah.
So the guy who died fell out of a helicopter and died. So they thought that Rambo had killed him, but he actually wasn't killed by Rambo. While shooting at him, he fell from the helicopter. So it would have been really difficult for the character to redeem the character in the later films if he actually had like slaughtered a bunch of cops. So I actually did like that aspect of the film, that you know he's kind of like he's going easy on them because you know he doesn't want to kill his fellow Americans. But yeah, definitely there are, you can see it in the scene where they're walking through the forest. It's after the cliff scene, so the first officer that fell out of the helicopter has already died. When they're walking through the forest looking for him, he's hunting them down one by one. That's another pretty cool scene, because it does feel, you know, you do get the sense that like these guys are just prey.
I love how like I mean, one of the things I love about it, I love the music to First Blood, and when you watch it, you realize that the music like perfectly suits what's actually happening, and it's done well. And one of the things you'll notice when you've seen it as many times as I have is that like Rambo's got a couple of different like themes, but one of the ones is like this where it's like a piano playing in a low key, and it's just like doom 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 doom, and it stops and it starts like doom 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 doom, and you'll notice that it's actually plays when Rambo's sort of creeping and sneaking through the forest. And the impression that it gives you is that it's like the music that you'd use for like a spider, and it's as if Rambo is actually a sort of a spider in a web, and they are like the flies in his web. And the best point is when there's a proper military march tune playing, because they've drafted in all of the National Guard, all of the local cops from the surrounding area have all been drafted in. And you get like this dum 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 dum, and it's clout, and you see it, and it keeps doing it. So it's like shit's getting really serious now. But then you just see Rambo's hand come over the top of a rock and the kind of spider tune starts playing again. And you just think, this is great. This is class stuff. Like, it's, like I'm going to get it in. Like, literally, they just don't make them like this anymore. Absolutely tremendous movie making. Like,
I also like that the National Guard, they just don't even want, do it. So there's a scene where Rambo is hiding in the cave. And one of the guardsmen launches a grenade into the cave, and they say, we must have got him. He must be dead now. And then I think the cave collapses, and then he's now stuck inside the cave. And then I think it's Colonel Troutman that says to him, "Well, yeah, you got to go in there and check," because Troutman knows that Rambo's not actually dead, but these guys think that he is. And the National Guardsmen are saying, "No, I'm not doing that. I'm not paid for this." So you can see that they're just guys who are ordinary guys who just put on a uniform maybe once a week, and they're really not actually prepared to engage with that kind of enemy.
Yeah, the weekend warriors, and one of them who orders the bazooka to blow up the mine. Teasel comes along and he says that you're going to have to. I can't remember his name, but basically you're going to have to clean up all this mess. And the one who did it says, "Well, I've got to be back at the chemist's. I've got to be back at the chemist's store or whatever, like on Monday morning." He says, "Well, you better get on with it then, because we're going to have his body." And the way the men talk to each other, you know that they've grown up together. You know, like, they shop at each other's stores, they go for beers together. Everybody knows everybody. So you get in the town itself, you really get the impression that it is like a proper community, you know, and people will go hunting together, and they'll have beers, and everybody, like, their wives will be friends, and all of this kind of thing. So you get the impression that this kind of nightmare has arrived on their doorstep in the form of Rambo, and they just don't know what to do about it. And then Troutman comes in as if to say, like, it's worse. it's even worse than what you think it is. And it's, you know, he's getting on the radio to Rambo, and you get that kind of military horn thing. I don't know what the instrument would be, some kind of French horn or something. And it's to give you the impression, like, what that does is it's kind of signifies military. So they've been through a lot together. It's kind of weird, because they're looking back. It's as if they've been through hell together, and now they find themselves back in normie world, and they just can't fit in. It's so great. It's so great. Like.
Yeah. Is it a bugle that you mean?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
The little handheld one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, yeah. So, Troutman is kind of like the closest, because at the beginning it's revealed that the only other guy that had survived in the platoon, he died from cancer as a result of being exposed to Agent Orange in Nam. And now Troutman's like the last thing that's kind of that resembles a family to Rambo, or not even a family, just even a friend, like the last person he really has any kind of connection with. And it's because he's the only person who understands him, because he went through the same thing that Rambo went through in Vietnam. You get the sense by the guardsmen and the cops in the town, like you mentioned, that it's a really wholesome town. The guy's talking about how he needs to go back to mind the pharmacy or whatever store it is. And he can tell that, like, they've lived in completely different worlds. The world that Rambo is used to is totally different than this small town America in Washington State.
Yeah, and from Teasel's point of view, it's kind of like he says, like, we're all just supposed to jump through hoops because one of your machines has blown a gasket. Like, yeah, you've got to take these men off, and they've got to be, as somebody in the chat said earlier, he says Rambo's been trained to eat things that would make a billy goat puke. And you get these lines that are kind of corny but kind of great. But, I mean, the point of it is, like, he doesn't really belong back in normal life. I can kind of sympathize with Teasel because he says at the beginning, it's a boring town and I'm paid to keep it that way. Like, so he doesn't know the full history, the post-traumatic stress issues of Rambo. Like, I do have sympathy for Teasel. He is just a sort of conservative, kind of paternalistic cop who just sees trouble and he doesn't want it. But obviously he gets it. He gets it in spades. And so what this leads to in the end is Rambo comes back out of the tunnel, especially with the spider type tune all the way through, of course. And then he hijacks a truck. And then you get the proper hero theme coming in again. And he goes back into town for the final confrontation. In the book, Troutman actually blows his head off, with a shotgun, I think. I have to correct myself as well. As Travis said, it was the original is in Kentucky, not Virginia. But as I understand it, in the book, there's much more death and killing. And there's actually, you can see it on YouTube, the original ending is where Troutman does actually shoot Rambo. But that would be, you can say, they were holding it open for the full-blown franchise. But I actually think, just in terms of a Hollywood movie, that would have been such a bummer of an ending. And we'll get on to the upturn in Hollywood itself later,
But it would have been a downer ending, but wouldn't it have kind of completed the character arc? I mean, if we're assuming that this was the only movie that they were going to make, they weren't going to make a franchise out of it, wouldn't that have kind of completed his character arc? Because the idea would be that he couldn't make it in civilized life.
We should actually say as well that he does have Rambo does a big monologue at the end of the film. By this time, the whole town's on fire. Teasel's he's not dead. He's been riddled with bullets from an M60. And Rambo has a big monologue, which is quite powerful. If you can understand what Sylvester Stallone's delivery because it's pretty slurred. But he's telling stories of back in Nam where him and his best friend were having drinks in a pub, and his friend, who was one of his buddies in the war, he always talked about how he was going to get a car and they were going to drive, were going to go cruising all over America when they got back. And what actually happens is that a small Vietnamese boy blows them up, throws a hand grenade into the bar or whatever. And the upshot of it is that his best friend is blown to pieces and his legs are blown off. And Rambo's saying he's trying to pull all of his bits of his body back in. He's saying, I can't find your legs. And he's crying. And there's a look on Troutman's face. And it's as if it dawns on Troutman for the first time, what he's actually put them through. And then the wider context of that is that when Rambo has gone through all of that hell and come back to America, he's got all of these baby boomer hippies spitting at him and calling him a baby killer. And I think Rambo, I think First Blood touches on something which is quite uncomfortable, because it was a weird time for the Americans, because they you could say, I think this way because of First Blood. But the general impression is that because of the Cultural Revolution in America, which was against the Vietnam War, that the soldiers got treated like shit on their return because it had become this low status activity. Now, I think that was obviously I'm not American and I wasn't around in that time either, but that does seem to hold some water with how I understand the history of it. I do think it's accurate, but again, you could just say that's because I've watched this movie hundreds of times, and along with all of the other Nam War movies, of course.
Yeah, I do know that it was obviously really really controversial issue at the time, and it is true that the New Left, as it was called, now it's basically just the Left, but it is true that they often would have on college campuses people with flags of the Viet Cong and things like that, and people out and out supporting the people who the American soldiers were fighting against. And I can imagine if I had been someone who had come back from that, it would have really dampened your view of your country, because when we look at you mentioned that the kind of the pessimism of the era, it's maybe something more associated with the 1970s than the 1980s, but this is, 1982, so it's not that far off. When you think of the era prior, the 1950s, early 1960s, I mean, America was just on top of the world at the time. I get the sense that Americans at the time would have just thought that they had it better than anyone else has ever had it, and that this was basically as good as life could possibly be. And they just seemed extremely optimistic. It just seemed like it was an extremely optimistic era. And then following the Cultural Revolution, which, we're still living with the consequences of today, following that, and then the Vietnam War, which played an absolutely vital role, because I mentioned this a bit earlier, but for a movement like the New Left, the Vietnam War basically was the narrative that they were able to spin off of that war was a touchdown for them. Sorry, it's a bit an American reference. I don't know if Brits will get that one, but they gained so much ground culturally off of the Vietnam War. I mean, they already had gained ground off of civil rights movement, but this one just really enabled them to push kind of that that envelope, which is really like the anti-white narrative. It enabled them to push that a lot further. Just the narratives that came out of the Vietnam War, and I have to imagine that it would have felt awful if you had been a soldier and gone off and fought, and then only to come back to be told that you're a baby killer and you're a oppressor and everything like that. I always remember there was this interview that William Luther Pierce gave in, I think it was in the 90s. Now, obviously, I didn't hear it in the 90s. I only heard it a couple of years ago. But and one thing he said about his political awakening was the Vietnam War was very impactful on him, because I actually am of the opinion that it was a bad idea for the United States to go off and fight in Vietnam. I think it was a war that they didn't need that they shouldn't have fought in. However, I think that the cultural ground that the New Left gained off of that did a lot more damage to the country. But what William Luther Pierce said was that he didn't even really support the war himself. He thought it was actually rather ill-advised, but he was shocked at the permissiveness of the state to allow out-and-out subversion. So the idea that people were allowed to just march down the street with Viet Cong flags as American soldiers were off in Vietnam fighting the Viet Cong. And the interviewer said he was a bit confused when William Luther Pierce said this. What he said was that, so you're saying that the state should have stopped these protests, yet you also think that there is a potentially you actually agree with their message. Now that might sound a bit like a contradiction, but it really isn't. Because regardless of what you think about the Vietnam War, it's more telling as a society, America was basically just permitting out and out subversion in a very flagrant way of the state and of the broader society. Because it's not even just opposition to the war; all of these other things, all these other awful social policies came through in this era. The stuff we're still dealing with today. And the point is that I think the point that that Pierce was trying to make, and the real takeaway that he got out of it, was that there is something that's really fundamentally wrong with the way the country is going. If we don't really have the fortitude to even really stand up for ourselves. And I get that a lot with this movie, because I don't think it necessarily is saying it's. I don't feel like it's a movie that's trying to justify the Vietnam War. And again, I don't know the political leanings of the people who made it. But then you also see it alludes to the real slap in the face that the Cultural Revolution would have been to people that would have fought.
Yeah. So what this all adds up to is a lack of confidence, and this is exactly what's happening in First Blood. What if you take a step back and you look at the problems, the context of First Blood is that America is at war with itself. And this is referenced by Rambo in the first two movies quite a lot, and by Troutman, and even a little bit by Teasel. That it's the idea that America is in what Rambo calls a quiet war, where it's this hatred of the men who've gone off and do their duty. But by the way, I mean, in all fairness, Troutman pretty much says that he will, like, Rambo probably did actually kill kids, which is, like, he probably actually did do the things he's accused of, which adds another sort of complication to it, because he was doing what his country, as he would see it, his country was telling him to do, which, of course, in reality, it was the deep state. But even then, you run into a problem, which is where I think you could do a meta-analysis of, like, this is actually why I wanted to have a look at the Rambo movies one after the other. Not so much the later two, but the core three. And it's because in my sort of thesis, which I've mentioned on Classic Movies quite a few times, but I thought I'll hit it properly here, is what you can see is the transition from 70s realism, which was America's lack of confidence, America with this kind of depressing, everything looked bad, New York had steam coming out of it, everything was wet, all the institutions were corrupt, it was all nihilistic, it was Taxi Driver and French Connection, and first, like, Rocky as well. Rocky, the Rockies mirror this as well, but just to stick with Rambo, you see that this kind of downbeat, dour sort of cinematography is in First Blood as well. But what's the question raised by this, I think, is how America is sort of lacking in confidence. It's got this kind of festering wound because of the Vietnam War. And at the end of the day, America's still in the Cold War, and they've still got to deal with geopolitical realities. They still have to deal with the fact that the Soviet Union's out there. They still have to deal with the fact they're a superpower and they have to exert power. And when we look at the sort of whole arc of the Rambo movies, it's as if somebody with a lot of clout in America has pulled some strings and taken a look at this and decided, we need a bit of a more confident outlook. Like, we need to have, people need to believe in the country again. People need to have a little bit of patriotism. People need to be able to cheer on America when we go out and fight wars, because there will be wars to fight. There's no way around it. And so First Blood is the first entry into this saga of, in a way, rehabilitating the American dream and America's kind of bringing confidence back into America. And what you'll find, which we can move on to now, is that so First Blood ends and then Rambo goes off to jail. And then we pick up the start saga again for Rambo 2. Would you agree with all of that?
Yeah.
Right. All right. So in Rambo 2, we jump straight into it. That it's I think it's about four. It's a few years later. It's quite complicated, the timeline, actually. I think at one point he says that in First Blood he's been back for 7 years, which would say, let's say he gets out of the army in 70, 71. It's more or less on point or something like that. At any rate, it's made clear that later in Rambo 2, it's 1985, which is also the year the movie came out. So this time round, Troutman goes to see Rambo, who's serving heavy, he's doing hard labor, mainly so we can get some muscle shots in. and yeah, because by this time, like, he's really beefed up. And now the Troutman says there might be a presidential pardon, and we want you to go back into Vietnam because there's a rumor there's some POWs left behind, and we want you to go back. Will you accept the mission? I actually liked, like, in a lot of these kind of movies, you know, like the hero circle type thing, It's like he at first they'll refuse it. They'll refuse the offer. They don't want to go. The call to adventure will be pushed back. Say Luke Skywalker or whatever. It's no, I don't want to do it. But Rambo's just like, yeah, I'll do it straight away.
Yeah, no so need to beat around the bush.
Yeah, we can just get on with it. So they fly him out, and then it's like he's they meet these bureaucrats and these NGOs who tell him, well, we're gonna send you in. You can tell they're scumbags straight away. They're sweaty, you know. They've got like pen pusher arms. They've never been in conflict. They don't have the sort of the military code of honor or anything like that. They're bureaucrats. They're scum. It's deliberately signaled that you can't trust these assholes. At any rate, he's going to go out and take photos, just photos, he's told. So that's like the opening gambit of Rambo 2. What did you make of Rambo 2?
Oh, I thought it was fun. It was a great movie. I mean, again, it's not one that's super deep plot wise, but there are some things to get into. But all in all, I really had a fun time with it. I thought the action scenes, I mean, they were over the top. There were explosions and helicopters and him getting tortured and him running around with a feed automatic machine gun. And it was a lot of fun. So in this one, we were just mentioning how like the previous film had been kind of a lot more pessimistic. With this one, it feels like there are two enemies for Rambo in this one. So there is the bureaucrat, that being, I think the guy they had at the base was a congressman, was it? Who was the guy at the base that the one that wouldn't okay the rescue mission?
I don't know who you mean. In Rambo 2.
In Rambo 2, yeah. The guy who the one who at the
there's,
end, like
Murdoch. Murdoch is the main bureaucrat with the white shirt, and then he's got two goons. One of them is the fella from Karate Kid. But Murdoch, I'll do it. Wait, you know it's Murdoch because later he's going to say, "Murdoch, I'm coming to get you," and then he kicks off in the jail. There's another jailbreak, but we'll come on to that in a bit.
Yeah. So Murdoch then. Yeah, sorry. The first time I've seen the movie, so I'm still, you know, not don't know all the characters by heart. But so Murdoch is one of the main villains. So in the 1980s, you often saw that the villain in the movie was the government. So you get the sense that the government is corrupt and that they're just a bunch of bureaucrats. And in this one, the guy, he's just made out to be a total asshole. So it's revealed that he's not actually interested in saving POWs. He's hoping that they can come back with no evidence that there were POWs, just so that they can close the case and then and basically get the families of the men who are still missing in action off their back. So he's a total POS. But the American military, they're actually portrayed as being in a quite favorable light. So this, you know, when Rambo's out there fighting or when he finds the prisoner, you see all the guys in the command base. They're all jumping for joy and they're all cheering and they're all, you know, cheering on their big guy out in the field shooting the commies. So the U.S. military is portrayed in a lot more positive light. And then they also have the bad guy being the Vietnamese and the Russian communists. The main villain is a ruthless Soviet officer and his muscular right hand man, the big henchman who Rambo is going to get into a fist fight with. I'll get onto that because he kind of does bear a striking resemblance to the villain in the third one too. But that's we'll save that for later. So it's a more optimistic film in that it you know, you get the Rambo's mission is to go out there and save other American soldiers. So it does have a lot more of the idealism and patriotism, perhaps faux patriotism that, you know, we'll get onto in the third one, but a lot more optimistic one nonetheless. And the villain seems to just be, it's the bureaucrats in Washington who are, never fought before. And they don't know what they're dealing with. And they answer to money and to the offices way off on the other side of the world. And then there's just the big bad commies who are just there to set up some good fight scenes and to have Rambo blow up at the end.
I mean, just in terms of the film itself, like there's a lot of killing in Rambo 2. In fact, there's like stuff on YouTube where they've got like a kill count running over at the site. They show you all the action scenes, which is like 90% of the film, and then there's like this kill count just ticking over. And there was loads of parodies, you know, there was like hot shots and stuff done of it, because it's just so cartoonishly and ridiculously over the top. There's I remember when I was a little kid, and I mean really a little kid, there was on BBC, I used to watch Barry Norman's, and it would be like, so in this case it would be like film 85 or something, and I would have been just a little toddler. But I did used to watch it. I did used to like Barry Norman's film reviews. I remember distinctly, like this might be the first movie review I ever watched. And I remember Barry Norman like saying, this is the worst film that I have ever seen in my life. It was absolutely shocking. It's just a bloodbath, really. And because the promise of First Blood was always like, well, if he's in a war zone, like you won't believe how brutal and how good of a killer he is. And of course, with the cops in the woodlands, he kind of takes it easy on them. But now it's like he's been let off the leash. And look, let's be honest, because it's like Asian people, it's. They're just like cannon fodder. They've got no character. It doesn't matter what their names are. It's just like, oh, there's, they all look like scumbags. And so the heroism, like the baseness, the masculine Chad energy is just off the charts. It starts where they drop him in, but he gets hung up with turbulence on the plane. So then he has to pull out the trusty old knife to cut his way loose. He drops down. He meets the pretty native girl who's going to be his guide. And then they go off together. They get on. They make a deal with some pirates, and the pirates take him to the prison. So they go to the prison. And then he realizes that there are indeed American POWs. Yeah, like what it would be at least 15 years later, but whatever, they're all there. And then that he rescues one, and this is where the killing starts and pretty much just doesn't end until the end of the film. He kills like a ton of guards. We also realize that his weapon is his favorite weapon is a bow, because. Well, there's a little thing as well that I wanted to touch on, and it's where Murdoch is going through Rambo's file, like how over the top all of this is, and he's looking at Rambo's ancestry, and he says, "Oh, you're Native American and German," and he says, "That's a hell of a combination." And what's implied is that like Rambo has that kind of raw kind of primordial warrior spirit of the Sioux Indian or something like that, but he's also got like the ruthless, calculating, tactical mind of a German. Like that's the little beats that's been hitting there. It's just like a combination of warrior and tactician rolled into one, like sort of muscle bound killer. So he goes out and he. Do I got some?
Well, yeah. What I was just gonna say was that you brought up that in the first movie, you know, he's not going full bore against the cops. I actually did get the feeling because, like, when I watched the second movie after having watched the first one, I was like, all right, the kid gloves are coming off. I've heard about how badass this guy is, but he wasn't going full bore. I want to see what he's like when he'll show absolutely no mercy to the enemies. And I got what I wanted.
The music's apocalyptic at times. The music, it's really just like, this man's going to bring about the end of the world. He's just going to kill everybody. And then what happens is the pirates sell them out. And so then there's a patrol boat coming towards them. And then like Rambo pulls out a shotgun like a pump action shotgun. He shoots about seven of them, and he does this thing where he guards himself with a dead body, with one of them, and uses them as like a meat shield. So then the patrol boat's coming towards them, and he mans like a heavy-duty machine gun, isn't it? But then he pulls out a bazooka. But then just as he's about to pull out the bazooka, somebody puts a garrote around him and from the roof, and so he has to pull out the knife, and he sticks him up with the knife, and the man like lets out this yelp, like, and you get a close-up of his face screaming in pain, and you see the blood coming down Rambo's hand, and then the boat blows up, Rambo goes over the side. But then it's like he's supposed to get picked up by Troutman, but when they realize, when Murdoch hears that he's actually got a POW with him, he cancels the mission. I think that's what you are. Abort the mission now. So just as they're about to pick them up, Rambo's left stranded, and it's the little native girl does a runner, and he's taken prisoner, basically. That's the end. That's kind of the end of that particular scenario. I'd say there's about 200 to 300 dead already.
And then we got the scene where he's being tortured in the camp. So the Soviet officer arrives, him and his, that's another thing in the 80s. You notice how they always had like the main villain, and then they had this like big muscular guy, you know, the main villain's there to be diabolical and to laugh as he's like tormenting the hero. And then the muscular guy's just there to punch it, to like have the scene where he's torturing the guy, and then later on they have the punch out. Like I'm pretty sure all the Indiana Jones movies had that. Yeah. In it. Almost every James Bond movie has that. You know, it'll have the main bad guy and then the henchman. You know, think of like Roger Moore against Jaws, or Sean Connery against Odd Job. I just love that trope. I always just love when they have the main diabolical villain, and then the muscle, the big guy who
the big goon.
Yeah, so there's the scene where the Soviet officer, who, by the way, he's played by an Englishman, by the way, his Russian accent is dreadful, but who cares, it's that's not what the movie's about. They're torturing him. What were they trying to get out of him again? I just remember the torture scene.
They wanted to know who he was with, like who sent him in, and what I don't really think it matters very much, to be honest. It was basically like, who sent you in, and who is it that you're in touch with? Because Murdoch isn't actually part of the American government. I mean, just to get back on the sort of the meta, Murdoch is actually, they're mercenaries. It's more like an NGO. It's like a public-private partnership, and Murdoch represents the private kind of part on that. So what they're doing is saying that the people, like, you know, to get back on First Blood, you get back on like sort of America's lack of confidence and what happened with Vietnam. At the end of the day, whose fault is it? And what they're saying here is that it was the scumbag bureaucrats who, and NGOs, that's whose fault it was. And that's what's being worked through in this. So we're kind of going through a transition phase, which is going to end up like straight back into full-blown neocon war propaganda, which this kind of is, but not quite, because it's still working through the issues. But at any rate, yeah, so they have to, the idea is that they're going to bring them back. But Murdoch doesn't want them brought back, because if those POWs showed up on the news, that would mean that America, in Congress and all the rest of it, would have to pretty much have to go back into Vietnam. It would cause like a real headache. So this is what Murdoch's kind of getting at. But what Rambo and Troutman see there is the same betrayal again that happened back in Nam.
Yeah, so... I did get that sense. Now, I guess I was wrong earlier that I thought that Murdoch's character was I thought he was a congressman. Again, it's the first time I've seen the movie, but I did get the sense that with Murdoch's character, he represents the bureaucrats, and the message is that, well, everything went wrong for us in Nam because we were stabbed in the back by bureaucrats in Washington, by NGOs. But our army is still full of a bunch of good all-American guys, and we can still go kick. We can still go kick ass, and we're not going to leave our men behind. So, yeah, I mean, the kind of like you see in the first movie, that the contrast between someone like Troutman and someone like Murdoch is that Troutman is he fought in the war, and he thinks of those guys who are still POWs. They're his guys, and you know he doesn't want to leave them behind because they spilled their blood together, and you know him and Rambo are determined to bring them home. Whereas for Troutman, he's thinking about the bureaucratic nightmare that's going to cause. That it's going to be this huge scandal. There's going to be all this clamoring, and then like you said, would it mean that the U.S. would have to go back into Vietnam to get those POWs out? So yeah, you do see that theme of patriotism, that it's kind of trying to save face for the U.S. Army, saying like, well, our guys are all these still are all these wholesome, badass, rough guys who can still kick ass.
So just to sort of flesh out my main thesis here, like about what was happening in Hollywood, is that if you go back to First Blood, where you've got the people are going to think this is a little bit out there, but bear with me for a second. If you go back to First Blood and you've got that thing where Rambo is like the rogue element running around, killing, you know, basically not killing them but taking them on, he's stalking them. It's actually very similar to Alien, which had come out a few years before, I think 2 or 3 years before. But when you then come to Rambo 2, you can say, okay, well, there's not that much of a connection. But when you come to Rambo 2, it's a different story, because James Cameron would go on, he would make Aliens 2, and he also wrote, together with Sylvester Stallone, Rambo 2. And when you go to... look at the story for a moment for Aliens 2. What you see is that you've got the initial problem of the aliens going rogue. You've got the initial problem of, once again, the NGO betraying the people, betraying sort of the nation, if you like. It's the scumbag. In Aliens, it's a corporation. It's these scumbag corporations. It's these scumbag bureaucrats and NGOs that are like stabbing us all in the back. They are responsible for Alien. When you go to Aliens 2, the story then is Sigourney Weaver has been floating around in space for, I think it's like 55 years or something. And the idea is that they're going to go back. They're going to go back to the planet where it all went wrong, which has now been settled by a bunch of normal people. They're living there. But this time they're going to go back and they're going to like take on the aliens once again. But except once again, they're stabbed in the back by the corporations. And in Rambo, what you'll see is that he is also going to go back to rest, just like in Aliens 2, they go back to rescue the innocent civilians. Rambo is going to go back, just like in Sigourney Weaver, to get the POWs. And he, like her, is going to be stabbed in the back by the NGOs, the public part, the corporations, and so on. Basically, James Cameron wrote both stories, and they're both pretty much identical stories. And I just find that a very weird coincidence. You could say he was onto a good grift, maybe, or maybe there's something more to that. Maybe there were certain things, certain ideas that they wanted to drop into the general, I wouldn't even just say America, but in the West in general. At any rate, there's clearly, it's pretty, Rambo 2 and Aliens 2 are pretty much the same movie, except, I mean, you know, I'm not being racist or anything, that would put the Vietnamese in the role of the aliens, and Rambo in the role of Sigourney Weaver. But it's basically the same film.
Well, I can't answer that because I haven't seen Aliens 2. But one thing that I wanted to point out before we move on to the third movie is that, because we'll get into the contrast with that one, which, you know, like you pointed out, the propagandistic ones, that one, it just turns it way up to 10. In this one, so Rambo and Troutman are fighting on behalf of their own nation. So, yeah, they're jaded. Yeah, they got beat up in Vietnam. Rambo, he can't make it in the civilized world. He can't make it in peace times back in small town America. But he even says at the end that he still loves his country, and he just wishes that they were given the he just wishes that they were given the recognition that he felt that they deserved. But the underlying theme is that they're fighting for their own guys. They're out there fighting for their own nation, you know, for the American POWs to bring them out of that communist scorching hot hellhole in the middle of the jungle and bring them back to their small town American bring them back to their small town American villages where they belong. So there is that idealism there. What we'll see in the next movie is that it's not really the same. It's framed as them fighting on behalf of somebody else, that being the Afghans. But if you wanted to get a few more things in on Rambo 2 before we go into the third one, you can do that too.
Well, yeah. So just to work it through, of course, I don't know if I should do it. It's because when I watch this with Mrs. Morgoth and a few friends, I do like impressions and whatnot. But basically, the girl who she wants to go to America, and it's because Rambo 2 is just so ridiculous. You've just got to love it, and she says. You take me to America, Rambo, and then as soon as he's done, and he only has like 20 lines in the movie, and he just goes, yeah, and you think, oh, finally, he's got a little cutie, he's got a bit of the fever there, and it's going to work out just fine. And then, like, immediately there's a little heartfelt moment, and she just gets riddled with bullets. And has left the dad. You thought I got there? And then the best part of the film, which we caught, is that he stalks down. He goes full beast mode on like the Spetsnaz. He's hiding, and you see where he's like, there'll be a mud wall, and the eyes just open, and he chases down like the Vietnamese commander who shot his would be kind of squeeze. And he puts a grenade on his arrow, and he just stands there, and the man's just like emptying clip after clip, and he cannot hit him. He just and this was the bit that was on Barry Norman. Like, Barry Norman actually showed the clip where he pulls it back and he just blows him to pieces, and you're supposed to think, like, yeah, that's it. And then immediately the Russians drop like a napalm barrel thing and blow up off of Vietnam, and it carries on. And then the beast mode gets worse, because Rambo ends up with like a helicopter gunship. And if you pay attention, he goes back to the little Vietnamese village, and you see like these like little peasants, you know, with those hats that those large straw hats on,
yeah.
that they wear. And he burns half of the Vietnamese army alive. And then he goes into the helicopter, and he blows up the village as well, and shoots the pigs. He shoots the chickens. He shoots the old people and blows up their homes. And when he's doing it, he gives out like this triumphant roar, as if, and you're thinking, like, he's gonna kill everybody. He's gonna kill everybody. He's gonna kill every Oriental person in the world. And so he gets the prisoners. There's more killing, because he kills everybody in the prison camp. He kills all of the Vietnamese villagers. He kills all of the Russian soldiers. And then he's going to go back, and he's going to pick up the POWs, fly them out. And then he kills the Russian captain as well. He blows him up in his helicopter. And he gets back to the main base, where he gives another big monologue. He shoots the whole place up. And it's finally this cathartic moment. It was you bastard. I've finally come for Murdoch. And it was the NGOs all along. It was the NGOs. It was the mercenaries. They stabbed us in the back. And he says, you find them. You find the rest of the POWs, or I'll find you. And then he has a few words with Troutman and wanders back off into the jungle. And that's kind of where we leave Rambo too. The just a bloodbath.
Oh, it is a hell of a final sequence, which goes on for like 20 or 30 minutes, I believe. Like that like last fight scene. It's not really a fight scene. It's kind of like just like 10 of them in a row, really. But no, it is pretty intense. But you know, it was just a wild ride. Of course, I love the scene where the Viet Cong guy just explodes and his appendages go flying in every which direction. Or when he tosses the big muscular guy out of the helicopter, and then when, you know, at the end when he blows the Soviet helicopter up with the main officer in it, he blows it up with the rocket launcher. Yeah, it's just a great scene. That's, you know, not much to say about it other than it was a pretty wild ride.
But so to get back to my main thesis, what we've done there is put the pain away. We've overcome it. We've drawn the poison, the scars from the past. I mean, imagine, like, you begin First Blood where he's this traumatized, as people calling him a baby killer. And by the end of the next movie, like, he's literally gone back to Nam and killed more babies. And we're cheering it on. Everybody thinks it's amazing. It's what a movie. What a great action movie. So in cultural terms, this is kind of like, as the leftists would say, the military industrial complex, sort of giving a bit of a bitch slap to like the left, do you know what I mean? To like the libtards, the bleeding hearts, as they would have said then, which is all well and good. But then we get into Rambo 3, which is, you get kind of puts you on a downer because you think, oh, well, yeah, now we're kind of just, this is just out and out kind of deep state propaganda now. You know what I mean? I'll let you lead us in.
All right, sure. Well, what I wanted to say was, just going off of what you had just finished with, was that you can imagine in the 80s there being some 14-year-old boy running around in his backyard who snuck into the movie theater to watch Rambo 2. You can imagine there being this 14-year-old boy running around in his backyard with a super soaker and his shirt off pretending to be Rambo and thinking that it's cool. I don't think you could get that from First Blood. So you kind of see that, you know, he's now the hero again. So then the first one, he's kind of an anti-hero. He's kind of like this tragic figure. And in the second one, he kind of becomes the traditional hero again. The quintessential 80s action hero with the big muscles and the huge machine gun with feed ammunition. So do you want me to introduce us to the plot of Rambo 3?
Yeah. I mean,
sure. Yes. So it starts off with him in Thailand. And he's making money doing these fights. So he's fighting these guys and people are betting on it. He's winning this prize money, and then he's giving it to this Buddhist monastery and he's helping them rebuild this new monastery or something like that. So then Troutman shows up in Afghanistan, or sorry, in Thailand. He sees Rambo and then he tells him, well, you know, there's this war in Afghanistan right now. The Soviets are, it's, you know, several years into their invasion. We're pushing them back the Mujahideen are pushing the Soviets back because we've provided them with these anti-aircraft missiles. But in this one province, there is they're really having a hard time. And the commandant there, or whoever the Soviet guy in charge there is a butcher. And, I'm going to go there myself. Troutman says that he's going to go there himself to see what's going on and see what they can do to turn the tide in the favor of the Mujahideen against the Soviets. So there's also the bureaucrat character who approaches Rambo with Troutman. So. And it only takes like about 2-3 minutes. Like there's a scene, the immediate next scene is Troutman in the desert getting captured by the Soviet Union. And then the same bureaucrat guy comes back. And it was kind of shot a bit strangely because you get the sense that it would only happen 5 minutes later. But obviously Troutman would have had to go all the way to Afghanistan to see it happen. So anyway, the bureaucrat comes back to Rambo and says, well, the colonel's been captured. We need you to go in there we need you to go into Afghanistan to free him. And, you know, being that Troutman's the only friend that Rambo really has in the world, he decides to go into go into Afghanistan. He joins up with these Mujahideen fighters and they infiltrate the Soviet base. And there's this huge firefight between them. I mentioned earlier in the second movie that the main protagonist was this diabolical Soviet officer with a muscular henchman as a sidekick. Well, the villain in this one is also a diabolically evil, ruthless Soviet officer with a big muscular goon as a sidekick as well. You know, real creative there. But, you know, it is a fun action movie as well. So, of course, it's a big firefight. They infiltrate the base. Rambo and Troutman escape. And it culminates with this big battle between the Soviets and the Mujahideen. And throughout the movie, it's really building up the Mujahideen's cause. They're portrayed as these mystical, deeply spiritual warriors from a bygone era who are not afraid to die. Their souls are prepared. And the movie even ends very ironically with a message that dedicates the movie to the struggle of the Afghans. And I mean, I don't think I need to point out that the irony of that only a couple years later, the US would be fighting a war against the exact same people, but still a fun action movie, but there are a lot of other propagandistic elements to get into here.
I mean, the bureaucrat at the start, he's actually CIA. So in this, we've arrived at a place where, you know, we've traveled from First Blood, which is like, oh, we got hung out to dry and all of that. Everybody, all the institutions are corrupt and everything. And now it's like the CIA are the good guys. The CIA are heroes. And they're out there making sure that this probably was accurate, by the way. They probably were operating to make sure, just like they are today with Ukraine. They probably are. They were trying to get Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen.
That was definitely true.
Because you've got the whole Bin Laden sort of connection around this time as well. And what you've got here, of course, this is why Rambo 3 turned out to be a big joke, because they're kind of simping for the people that they'd be at war with, like, what, about 13 or 14 years later. They would be actually at war with the people who they're fighting with, these brave and noble people in Afghanistan. I mean, in terms of plot, it's kind of like the exact same film as Rambo 2. But what I don't like is that in Rambo 2, there's like literally no jokes. There's no humor. There's just the killing, which is fine. There's the apocalyptic music and lots of killing and gruesome sort of gore. And what they've tried to do here is kind of lighten it up a little bit. And I think there's three jokes, which I just find obscene. Whenever I watched this again yesterday, and I was like, whenever there's a joke cracked, I'm like, no, Rambo doesn't do jokes. Like, I don't want funnies. And there's more of a kind of sentimental kind of vibe going on. There's more, he ain't heavy. I think he ain't heavy, he's my brother kind of thing. Because you'll notice in this one, he does actually refuse the call to action. It starts where he's doing stick fighting. And he, like, you know, because in the 80s with Jean-Claude Van Damme and everything, like, martial arts was big. So they've slipped a bit of that in, which he obviously, Rambo's brilliant at it. And he takes down this fella, and then he's left there with the old bloodlust in his eyes as the local champion's terrified. And there's like eye-to-eye contact. And it's as if the fella realizes that Rambo's a proper killer. Like, he's not, like, this fella's killed thousands of people. He's a beast. And he kind of drops his arse a bit, and he's like, "Oh God, I'm happy to be alive." And then, so they've bumped him up, and then of course they kind of soften him up because he's living in a temple with Buddhist monks, fixing their roof for them, and all of this kind of thing. And you think, you know what I mean? So he does refuse the call to action, though. So we're back on a standard kind of cliche at every stretch here. And the format is kind of becoming a little bit hackneyed. It's the jailbreak scene. It's in this one, they do the jailbreak thing. Rambo actually gets shot in the side, and he pulls out the trusty knife again, and he chops the tip off a bullet, and he pours all of the gunpowder into the wound. And you see the fire come out each side, and it's another. So it's a callback to First Blood, where he stitches himself up.
Yeah, so I mean, one thing that again, this was also it was a pretty fun action movie. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say it was a pain to get through. There are, you know, some things are a bit ridiculous. In contrast to the second movie, so I mentioned that, you know, he's going off and trying to save his fellow Americans and former comrades in Vietnam. And in this one, now there is some element of that Troutman is now a POW, the closest thing Rambo has to a friend, and he's headed off to Afghanistan to save his buddy. One thing I'd say I didn't like as much, though, was really how they really blew smoke up the Mujahideen's asses, that they really kind of built them up. And it was pretty cringe. I mean, not to mention what would happen several years later, but I've never really liked movies where the white man goes off and fights on behalf of someone else. That's always something that's bothered me. Now, and just to be clear, Lawrence of Arabia is not that, because Lawrence was actually he was serving his country by doing it. I kind of didn't like the way that they really, really built up the Mujahideen. Whereas in this one, in the second one, basically the communists, the enemy, where they were just scum and just guys there for Rambo to shoot down. It's kind of like that in this one as well. So the Soviet troops are portrayed as being pretty brutal. They talk about how this like 9-year-old kid that they killed his family, and that he's determined to die in battle because, something about their religion and about how this is what they were made to do. I didn't really pay too much attention to the spiritual mumbo jumbo that they had about the Mujahideen, but they're really like building them up. So yeah, you just put on the screen right now. This film is dedicated to the brave Mujahideen fighters of Afghanistan. And the other thing to point out is that it really does demonstrate the short-sightedness of neoconservatism. So when you look at something like this, that they were building up the Mujahideen as these freedom fighters against the horrible evil Soviet Empire, and we got to arm them with missiles. And then of course a couple years later, America would be fighting against them as well. There's even a line in the movie that Troutman says to the Russian officer, who's pretty much a less entertaining clone of the Russian officer from the second movie. There's a scene where he says to him that, you guys don't know what you're dealing with. This is the graveyard of empires. Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires. The British tried to invade it. Alexander the Great tried to invade it. America, we had our Vietnam, and we learned the lessons that you're going to learn. And again, remember 2021, a graveyard of empires, not learning your lesson. Well, the real irony is America, not only did they end up at war with the same people they were arming, but they also it basically turned out to be another Vietnam. It turned out to be the longest war in American history, went on for 20 years. At the end of it, I imagine there would have been soldiers fighting in it who weren't even born when it started. And it just shows how short-sighted the geopolitical policies, the foreign policies of the American Empire and the State Department really have been over the course of the last 40, 50 years. And, you know, this movie is kind of an ironic reminder of that.
Yeah, it's a departure as well from the main Rambo lore, which was always rooted in Vietnam. There's nothing to do with the original arc of First Blood. Okay, that's the high watermark. That's amazing. Emotional, we get it. Then it's kind of like Rambo 2 is the catharsis. We're going to put the ghosts to bed now. We're going to draw the poison. We're going to work this through. And all that does, all that is in preparation for is, and this is why I've been kind of hammering on it, is what you then do is have confidence for, which is now coming, the cycle is now coming again, some would argue, which we can get onto. By the time you get to Rambo 3, you've got this out-and-out neocon sort of 1.0, if you like, or at least State Department propaganda. of the military war machine. Like it is that's so that's what the we have to get confidence back in the nation. We have to get people believing in America again. We have to get them waving the flag because we need to support Islamic fundamentalists in a country nobody's ever heard of, and then we need to big them up. But to be fair, Troutman says, like at the time this came out, it is true. Troutman says most people would have no idea where Afghanistan was, and that's true. I'm not that old that to have paid attention to the news at this time, but I get the impression it was seen as something going on way off, and it wasn't. America wasn't directly involved. I mean, even with Ukraine today, it's bordering Europe, so you can understand why there's more of an investment. But Afghanistan is literally in the middle of nowhere. And back then, before 9/11, of course, there wouldn't have been that you had much of a stake in. Of course, as people in the chat are saying, when you get the night after 9/11, like this looks like total cringe, and it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've made that I made the point in a video that I made about the post 9/11 neoconservatism and the faux patriotism that led the United States into the Iraq War and ironically into Afghanistan. And the point I made was that the real jumping the shark moment for neoconservatism was when there were these two U.S. congressmen who decided that because France wouldn't endorse the United States invasion of Iraq, they would change French fries on the menu of the Capitol building, I believe it was. They would change the word French fries to freedom fries because the French didn't believe in freedom because they didn't want to invade Afghanistan. And well, I mean, as you can imagine, this basically is about as cringe as it sounds today, and it really shows on. It really reflects on the real naivety of that second gasp of American patriotism, which you really see in its infancy with a movie like Rambo 3, but you would see come into fruition throughout the 90s and then culminate in the years following 9/11. We talked about this quite a bit in our previous stream on Black Hawk Down, but when you look back on it today, you do see that the patriotism, while maybe it is a bit more healthy, it's more healthy to have a patriotic outlook to admire the military than something like that would have been going on during the Vietnam War. However, there is a major downside to that, and it's that it funnels support into these neocon wars in God knows where, off in some Muslim country that no one's ever heard of before. While there is that optimism and it makes you feel better, it's foolhardy when it comes down to it. And Rambo 3 is a pretty funny example of that.
Because if you look at it as well, if you look at the marketing for Rambo, this would clearly be targeted. This is like sort of made with, say, boys from Louisiana or Alabama in mind, you know, rather than like urbanites from New York or something. You know who's going to enjoy these Rambo movies the most, besides somebody like me, you know, but it's like, who's like just obsessed with the 80s action movie. Like, I think it's clearly a dog whistle to a sort of war fighting demographic in America, that it's specifically designed to do that. And so when you look at it today, if we look at the whole kind of cycle, what people, if you think this despondency and this lack of self-belief in the American dream, which kind of lingered throughout the 70s a bit, then you get Ronald Reagan coming in, you find this new confidence, the 80s is a very optimistic time. It's reflected by the Rambo. It's not, when you produce a movie like Rambo 3, this is not like a nation which is lacking in self-confidence, which is where we were with First Blood. But when you kind of switch to today, to compare today, you can, in a way, look at it as if they were putting the woke of that era away to get onto a discussion which goes on into these circles. And so if it's the case, because we've all seen these adverts now, the military recruitment adverts all feature white men again. And it isn't just in America either. I've seen an Australian one doing it as well. And you wonder, like, is it going to be like a, what would it be now? Like a Rambo 5 where they sent him off to Ukraine or something like that?
is it going to be in a wheelchair? Is he going to have like a mechanized wheelchair?
But to be fair, like Stallone's, he's got a new, what's that thing he does with Dolph Lundgren and Arnie and all of the rest of them? The Dispensables or something?
Expendables.
He's got another one of them. He's still actually doing action stuff. But you never know. Maybe like it'll be Rambo 5 and they'll send him out to Ukraine or whatever the current thing is. Rambo 5, the current thing. For the internet age. But the point is, what people are talking about in terms of putting the woke away would be the cycle which I've been kind of getting at here. Because as it stands right now, we are really in a bad way culturally, demographically as well, by the way. And whether they can pull a rabbit out of a hat and I didn't even know what it would be that people would believe in anymore. Because at least, like, what would replace the kind of Reaganism? What would they use to make people optimistic and believe in the West again?
The only thing that I could imagine doing that would be to build up some other countries as an existential threat. But I just think that it's not going to be possible. Like you mentioned that they're now putting white men back into these military ads, whereas 2 years ago, we were getting these cartoon ads with this, you know, with this squeaky female voice talking about her lesbian moms. That was a U.S. military ad from 2 years ago. Now we see a bunch of rough and tumble white guys jumping out of planes with parachutes. I just don't think it's going to be possible for a few reasons. One is that there was actually something to like about the America of the 80s. Now, I think everyone in our sphere is well aware that the subversion, which has led us to where we are today, that had already happened by then, happened a couple of decades earlier, and we were well on the way to where we are now by then. But there was still something to actually, America still offered the white man something, and that really goes for any Western country. So your average guy could still get his house in the suburbs. He could still get married and have his two kids, and you have his career and his car. And eventually, if he works hard enough, he gets his six-figure salary. That was still a thing. You know, the propaganda of the era, I think it more just kind of backs up that. I don't think that alone can create this idealism when the reality of these Western countries now is just the total opposite of that. I've stated that I do not think that the woke is going to be put away. Not that I want to bog the stream down with that issue. I think it's mostly because, well, too many of the woke, as they say, are already too embedded into the system, already too embedded into positions of power. Secondly, because so much of what they're doing now is reliant on keeping this and keeping the woke going. However, I can imagine that an institution like the military would try to tone some of these things back. And like we're seeing in these advertisements, they are doing it. For what it's worth, seeing the comment sections of these ads, these new ads that now are featuring white men, it's pretty encouraging that it doesn't seem like it's working. Like this would have worked in this movie, Top Gun. Like I heard that after Top Gun came out, enlistment in the U.S. Air Force absolutely skyrocketed. It's not going to work because you see in the comment sections, if that really tells you anything, people are, you know, all the comments are from our guys spouting off the kind of things that we would say on Twitter about this kind of thing. And it just seems like it's a ghost dance to try to recapture some of the idealism and the optimism of an era like the 1980s and bring that into the present day because the West is now facing these geopolitical battles. I just don't think they're going to be able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, somebody in the chat says, "Oh, so Russia and China aren't threats." Yeah, they absolutely are. I mean, we did. I don't want to rehash it all again, but on the Black Hawk Down film review, which is on Endeavor's channel, we got into that. We got into the long weeds of the BRICS and the current geopolitical situation. So the takes on that are on that stream. I don't really want to just go all over through it again, but where we talked about the third worldism and all of this kind of thing. So yeah, that's all on the Black Hawk downstream. But they are, but they, I mean, their lives being made easier by the idiotic sort of self-destructed policies of well, the shorthand is woke, one of the political correctness in general. And somebody else says you could actually do this with Trumpism, which I think would be fitting. It's more likely you would have like Rambo and Donald Trump kind of have the similar kind of rah 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 attitude. I do think that fits together quite nicely. I mean, obviously, I don't think it'll be Sylvester Stallone doing like a new Rambo movie. You never know.
Will Trump be the new Rambo? I mean, they're around the
yeah,
same
maybe
age.
it's, maybe it's just Trump himself. They can AI him to sort of make him look a bit fitter than what he actually is, and Trump himself as Rambo. But it's because it's funny because Trump, he is of that era. He does have that those signifiers of that kind of confidence of the 1980s, you know, the go-getter and
Well, he's a
the
man of the
rover.
1980s.
Yes, absolutely. And so it's funny that you should see that kind of being rehashed now. When you know, obviously he's an old man now. I mean, the funny thing is, we're laughing about Stallone, but I think he's actually younger than Donald Trump. But still, they're both more or less the same age. But they so you do have it. You do have this kind of hauntology of the 1980s and Reaganite America hanging around in a way with Donald Trump. I mean, what I think the new slogan is like "Make America Powerful Again" or something, which is something slightly different to "Make America Great," which because that implied bringing industry back and that's still self-confidence. But the newer slogans appear to be much more with geopolitics in mind.
Yeah, I just don't think that, again, I don't think it's going to be possible because I think that the Trump train has come and gone as well. Like, a lot of people are probably pretty jaded with his one presidency and the lack of results that that yielded, and then everything that's gone on since then. And secondly, is it that the system doesn't want it as well, so they're pretty intent on trying to throw Donald Trump in jail. Whether or not he'll actually win the election, I don't know. But I mean, who knows? Will they even allow him into office, even if he does win? Not that I want to get bogged down on that in this stream, but it just doesn't seem like there's anything to really fall back on to kind of recreate that the kind of naive patriotism that neoconservatism banked on in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. It doesn't seem like there's really anything to fall back on now. And just any attempts to do it would, well, kind of be like trying to make another Rambo movie, I would say.
Have you got any more? I find that I've got a lot more to see on Rambo 2 than Rambo 3. I kind of, I don't know. I just find it disappointing overall. I hear, you know, when there's like a whole army of Soviets get them at the end, and Rambo says, "Oh, it looks like they've surrounded themselves." And because jokes just aren't really a thing on Rambo, Troutman actually has to point it out. He has to like say like turn around and he does a line and he says like, "It now's hardly the time for humor, John." And it was like just to tell the audience that that was a joke there. Like Rambo just made a joke, and I just find it so awkward and clunky. And I don't like I don't again like I find some of the people in it like phenomenally ugly as well. They just look the features are hideous. But maybe that's about as spicy as I can get on that on YouTube, I'm afraid.
Well, I mean, I would say that it was still kind of an entertaining action movie, definitely nowhere nearly as good as Rambo 2. I did kind of like the theme of Rambo and Troutman fighting together. I just kind of wish that it didn't have the extreme ridiculous neocon propaganda and building up the Mujahideen as if they're the greatest thing in the world. That's the one thing I did kind of find cringe, but good action. There are a few good action scenes. So overall, it's a watchable movie, but not as good as the first two.
I mean, so a couple of people are mentioning Rambo 4 in the chat. I enjoyed Rambo 4, but I don't think it's part of the main. So to be fair, Sylvester Stallone did actually regret Rambo 3. I remember after 9/11, especially when everybody was like, sort of. This is a strange thing because in the 90s, so Rambo 3, I think it was 1988, and during the 90s. Everybody thought all of the Rambos were just cringe. Like, they didn't want to touch them with a barge pole because in the 90s, it was a much more knowing, much more ironic humor that took hold. And there was a kind of, you got like Hot Shots, Weird Al Yankovic, and basically Rambo became this joke. It became this thing just to be parodied. And so I don't think I watched them at all during the 90s. And it was a shame because First Blood kind of got buried under it. Like, how First Blood is just a great film, but it got sort of buried under all of the piss taking and everybody just saying how crap Rambo movies were, you know, and everybody just tearing them apart, saying they were like the stupidest, worst movies ever made. And it got worse because after 9/11, of course, people went back and they found that old thing with the Mujahideen at the end titles of Rambo 3. And it was kind of like, this is just the cherry on the cake, how ridiculous that all was. And Sylvester Stallone, I think it did get him a bit. And later, in 2008, he made Rambo 4 to try and kind of reset the balance a bit. And that was in Burma, and he was taking on the Burmese junta. And you had like the interesting elements of that, or that you've got this really nice white woman. There's a little Christian sect gone over on a humanitarian mission. And by this time, Rambo's like really jaded, and he's older as well. And he's living a quiet life in the jungle. Just catching snakes and selling them. So he tries to warn these people, like, you don't want to go up there. And he's really brutal as well. And of course they ignore his advice. They go up anyway. And I did an article on me the original Morgoth Review blog, which I called John Rambo and the Eternal White Woman, because basically he was this like jaded, cynical sort of war-weary old dinosaur now, but yet he still had to strap on the bandana, and he forges himself. It's not like the normal knife anymore. It's like more like a meat cleaver or something, and he has to set off. And when he sets off and the killing starts, then one of the men is like this insufferable libtard, and he's kind of responsible for bringing him up there. Because he's got this kind of view, like a normal white libtard, which is like, oh, well, we just have to give them a chance. We just have to, you know, they're all humans. We're all humans at the end of the day and all of this crap. And Rambo, like, smacks him around. He's saying, like, they would have raped her for weeks on end and cut her throat. Like, you're an idiot. What are you thinking? You don't belong here. Go home. And I first thought, yeah, nice point, because at that point, I was starting to get a little bit politically awakened. I nearly put my foot in it there. Like, but at that point in 2008, I was getting kind of politically awakened, and I was becoming aware that there was a problem with certain European people, that they just seemed suicidal. And I was grateful, because now that the Rambo movies were kind of being rehabilitated in my mind, and I wanted to go back and watch the old ones, it was okay again. It was okay to like Rambo again, because it seemed to be firmly on the right, even though we can acknowledge that in the end, it ended up just being neocon propaganda, but okay, we've talked about that. It was at least sort of culturally speaking to the problem of out-group empathy, which plagues us to this day.
Oh yeah, definitely. I it's been about 15 years since I've seen Rambo 4, but I can't really say that much about it. But the one scene that I do remember is the scene where there's that guy who's, he gets angry at Rambo for killing the Burmese, and basically Rambo just says, and what you said, that he chews him out because he's just totally delusional about what these kind of people are, which, it, I mean, I guess in that sense, it is actually a pretty based, thing to say. So maybe I'll give the fourth Rambo another shot. I haven't seen it in years and years, and this was the first time I saw the first three, but I can't really say too much about it though.
All right. I'm gonna hit the super chats. There's more than usual come in, but before I do that, there was a Hungry Haggis sent something in, so let's get onto that. Hunky Haggis sent something on the coffee pot. How do you think the general sense of humor of a nation gauges how it's doing? For example, in Britain in the 60s, you had Morecambe and Wise, which was very upbeat, light, and good-natured, and left you feeling better compared to the day where I actually feel sick and lethargic after listening to Frankie Boyle or Stuart Lee. How can the dissident right change this for the better? How can the right-winger constructionist counter the deconstruction that's left? I think we should, it's quite a long one there, Hungry Haggis. Basically, I think the way you go is what people do every day on Twitter is deconstruct the left. You deconstruct the deconstructionists because they are the ones who own all the institutions. They are the ones who are putting these narratives out there. And as we all know, they are ridiculous. I did an article on Frankie Boyle on the Substack a few months ago where they are the system. To keep it short, like they basically are the system, and you have to make them own it, because the way they get out of this is by pretending they're transgressive, which is not. It's just a fiction. It's just rubbish. So what you do is then break apart their narratives, which is what all a dissident can do. Wear them down. Which, I mean, I think everybody has been doing this for a long time, which is why nobody trusts the media, and you've got these. You know, that leads to the kind of redoubling of the efforts of censorship to get form narratives and fact checkers and all of this kind of thing. So that's kind of already happening, and the problem that they try to address. I think that's where we are now. Have you got anything to say on that one, Endara?
Well, what I like to do is I like to poke fun at the things that you're not supposed to touch, the sacred cows of the regime. I find that that's a really effective thing, because one of the reasons that they can't produce humor now is because they can't have a sense of humor about themselves. They're trying so desperately to protect their sacred cow. So if you watch one of these modern Hollywood movies, it's not and they try to insert jokes, it's not funny, because you can see it's the system punching down at its enemies, and the humor doesn't work that way. One thing I'll do is I like an example of what I mentioned, kind of taking shots at the sacred cows of the ruling ideology, is like when a libtard calls me racist on Twitter, I won't go into it. I won't start like duking it out and have a 30 tweet back and forth. All I'll do is I'll take a picture of Morgan Freeman, write a grammatically incorrect quote about racism are bad or something like that, and say that the quote was by Nelson Luther Floyd Jr. And then I just send that to them. And then that's basically that's how I respond to that, because rather than getting into a fight with some libtard on Twitter who's just going to ruin your day and waste a bunch of your time, instead of doing that, just have fun with it, because it's much better. It's more satisfying for you, and you'll save a bunch of your time. So I'd say just poke fun at their sacred cows.
Yeah. All right. So Travis Happy, $5. Thank you very much for that. Shark or Cart for $2. Thank you very much. Alice Little says there's a strong generational gap element too. Brian Dennehy, the sheriff, and Richard Crenna, the colonel, are antithetical father figures for Rambo. Yeah, absolutely. They both call him like the kid as well. Brian Dennehy, even in his office, you can see he has a drink in his office, and him and Troutman go for a drink in a pub, in a bar. And they're talking like that. They're talking about the kid, and both from this sort of fatherly perspective, which is, yeah, that's true. They are like two fathers over Rambo, one of them representing the civil life, which he can never have, and one of them representing the military life, which is all he will ever know. Yeah, that's a good one. Rambo is an Italian-American as opposed to Troutman, who is a WASP. Again, Alice Little for £5. Thank you very much. One is Ordinary Joe and the other embodies old Uncle Sam himself, metaphorically. Yeah, and Troutman gets drafted in from the Pentagon, where he says he's been shining a seat with his ass. So he is properly, Troutman is properly of the establishment. So it does that very well, where the establishment is coming out and they're saying he is a machine, he's our machine. You know, that there is this kind of element to it, of that, where it's the system, the deep state sort of military industrial complex do claim ownership of Rambo, at least in the first two. I mean, the tension is in the second one, especially where Rambo questions that. Webster for £10, thank you very much. We are naive to think at the time boomers were a source of anti-white brainwashing. It's certainly JW members of Silent Gen and GI who brainwashed the boomers in college campuses at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And Shark Heart, which is for two Canadians, again, thank you very much. Better off African tribal machete shit than war. Travis, happy gate. You guys should review American History X. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I saw you put that in the chat. And there's a problem with censorship when you get into that kind of territory.
It would have to be an Odyssey only.
It would probably have to be an Odyssey special, I'm afraid. And we've become pretty good at kind of, you know, as is everybody who's still left, using a bit of code words and, you know, the odd nudge and a wink here and there. But sometimes when the main content itself is just that subject, it's even just the title would attract attention. So that
yeah, and no one wants to listen to us use a bunch of code words for an hour and a half. If it's just one line, then okay. But if we're just going on about that constantly, not even saying what we actually want to say, it would just get irritating.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks anyway. We'll see what we can do. Shark Art Heart again. That's another. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to Millennial this year. So yeah, I may as well give that. Millennial is up and running, everybody. I would say keep an eye on Millennial Wars on Twitter, on Telegram, and he's already putting out the, I don't know what you'd call them, the little fancy kind of video graphic things. And it's Afrodi's been doing the movie festival as well recently. I think Last Things has been doing a movie festival. And then it's easy to forget these things are going on, you know, and it's a lot of effort for these lads. So we should do more to help promote them and whatnot. So yeah, Millennial is coming down. I don't know when it starts. It'll be soon. I'm just looking at the date on the computer. But yep, I'm going to be on there as well. But I am going to draw a hard stop after 2 hours. I'm not doing that crazy.
I mean, last time I asked him, oh, did you kidnap Morgoth or something like that?
This time it's 2 hours. I'll do 2 hours and maybe half hour for super chats or whatever, but I'm not doing any crazy marathon streams again. Like
I'll be on this year as well, so you can catch.
All right, so there we have it. The 30th classic movie stream. I want to pick up where I came in on the stream because we do try to keep. We've hit some pretty heavy duty subjects in the 30 movies that we've reviewed, and it feels like we've traversed a lot of territory. There's been a lot of war. A lot of war in it. Maybe we can add a bit more science fiction in them going forward for the next streams. I think some of the heaviest duty one was probably Space Odyssey, but yeah. We've done some cracking ones. Like, I mean, I do try to go in prepared with a little bit of background information, and you know, have the list of hot takes and whatnot. So. Yeah, it's been a good few years doing these, hasn't it?
Oh yeah, I've had a blast.
All right. So what's have you got any ideas what we'll be doing for number 31?
I do. Since next month is Christmas, I thought I'd choose something Christmas related. I know you just said we've done a lot of war, but might decide to do another one of those. I was thinking of doing Jouy Noël. You know the movie about the Christmas truce?
No, I've seen Line Drinker for $9.99. I effing hate Endeavor. Imagine having the opportunity to be able to watch Alien 2 for the first time. I'm jealous as hell. I thought that was going to get a bit weird there for a second. Like, but yeah, it's big news that you haven't watched Aliens 2 yet.
Ah, come on. I'll get around to it.
All right. So, all right then. So there we go. We're going to have a Christmas movie, but it'll be war. We've done Gremlins. This is the thing. Like, we did Gremlins last year, so it's all there on the channel. I would appreciate it. Before suggesting a film, go back and check, and you'll notice that maybe it's been done, and Gremlins has been done. In fact, I think it's even on my channel. We did it just before Christmas last year.
Yeah, that
was okay. So there you go. Anyway, thanks a lot, Classic Movies fans, and we'll see you next time. By the way, Line Drinker, thanks for that 999 super chat, which I thought was gonna be drama. Oh, we've got one last quick one. Phil Regular, $5. Can do a bit more Vietnamese girl voice, please. No, you've had your whack. You'll have to. It'll probably get clipped. I'll tell you what as well. When somebody says, "Oh, Morgoth, it's all black pills, it's all doom and gloom," you clip that out, and you show them that. I have a bit of fun on my platforms, man. Now and then. Right, I'll see you later, folks.